Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is science teacher, pop culture writer, and I'm going to say comics enthusiast, Matt Brady.
Sure, that works.
Matt is a high school science teacher, a adjunct professor at Wake Forest University, and the co-founder of Newsarama, which is still going strong these days, even without his expert hand at the helm. But Matt has a new project, something near and dear to his heart, and that's bringing science to a new level of student who wouldn't normally watch anything scientific. So, of course, you have to bring Rick and Morty into the equation, right?
Of course. If you're talking science and pop culture, Rick and Morty is at the top of the list.
Yeah, it's either Rick and Morty or Mythbusters. I don't know who you have to choose from in that sense. But your book, your new book, is called The Science of Rick and Morty. And you dive into, let me see if I get this right, the various experiments they've done on the show and see how they hold up in the real world.
It's the experiments, and it's also just the science mentions and their uses of science, a whole kind of all of the science that's in Rick and Morty. I kind of take it out of the show, turn it over in our world, see what our world versions of it look like, and kind of play with it a bit, just like Rick and Morty does.
Now, how did this book come to be? Because I'm imagining a pitch meeting where someone says, hey, Rick and Morty do science. Let's do science cartoons. Let's do a book about science cartoons. And I'm trying to wrap my head around how this came to be.
Well, actually, I think it's a fairly simple story, but maybe I might be a little bit biased about it. As you mentioned, I'm a high school science teacher. My wife is also a high school science teacher, and we use pop culture to help our students kind of get engaged with the content, with the science, and have a feeling of ownership about the science, that if they understand it and can connect with it kind of in a way that's outside of the classroom a little bit, or not straightforward as here is science, we will talk science, they have a better time with it, and they take some ownership of it, and they stay hooked on it for a while longer. And so I've used many different versions of many different pieces from pop culture over the years. And my wife and I have founded a website a few years back called thescienceof.org, where I write articles about science and pop culture. My wife writes some bits here and there about helping other science teachers kind of utilize pop culture in their classroom. And I had written two articles kind of over the run of the website, written two articles about the science of Rick and Morty, and didn't think anything of it, really. I write articles about comics and movies and TV. But this was different, because then in March of 18, I got an email from an editor in the UK saying, I really enjoyed your articles. I really liked what you did there and how you explained the science of it all. Would you be interested in writing a book about the science of Rick and Morty? And kind of long story short, everything worked out, and I was, and I did. And so that's how the book came to be. We looked at all of Rick and Morty at that time. There were just the three seasons, and said, okay, well, what's the science here? How can we kind of break this out and look at it from a realistic or a real world point of view? And throughout it all, I'm not looking at it to just say, oh, this is stupid. Rick and Morty is dumb on how it looks at this, because that's not real science at all. I'm trying to kind of enrich the experience of, you can watch Rick and Morty, say the episode where they go into a simulation and the simulation's only operating at 5% capacity. And I kind of go into the whole science, the real science of this idea that we might be living in a computer simulation, which it gets kind of creepy, because there is a non-zero chance that we're living in a computer simulation. And depending on who you talk to, that could be a small number non-zero, or it could be a rather large number non-zero. And so that's what I do with all the science in Rick and Morty, is just kind of take it out and look at it and turn it around and turn it over. And in many cases, find out that the science, our real world science, is a lot weirder than what you see in the stories of Rick and Morty.
Now, for the book, did you pick specific scientific experiments that were done in the show, or just mentions of wacky things, or a combination?
I tried to lump it together. I tried to kind of put it in categories that I could handle the most at one go. For instance, I have a chapter on cloning. In a few episodes, there are clones. Rick clones himself. There's a possibility that Bess might be a clone. And so I kind of just dig into cloning, even though it spans a few episodes. Well, what's the science of cloning? What do we see in Rick and Morty, and how does that correspond with what's going on in our world? And what are some of the things that we always talk about with cloning in science fiction, and how does that compare with what we know? And in Rick and Morty, he has Operation Phoenix, I believe that's what he calls it, something Phoenix, underneath the garage where he has his bank of clones, just in case he needs one. And that kind of came up in the first episode of the fourth season here. They kept showing up in another Rick's bank of clones. And that's interesting to think about, because we see that a lot of, oh, there's this bank of clones and I can just, you know, wake them all up. It's really a lot more difficult than that. The idea of I can transfer consciousness into a clone and just be working in a new body or something like that. It's great in fiction, but when you look at the reality of it, it's just, again, personal bias here. I think it's just fascinating to look at the reality of it. And you think, well, okay, if I want to put my consciousness into that clone has a fresh body, but also a fresh brain that doesn't have the connections and doesn't have the structure that my brain has spent 40 plus years building up. And so if I put my consciousness into that fresh brain that has only known life inside that fat, what would happen? You know, would I be able to control that clone, or would it just be all kinds of problems? And kind of the thinking is that if I transfer my consciousness into a fresh clone, it would be all kinds of problems instead of you open your eyes and you pop out with your memories and everything intact. So that's kind of the way I would go about it. I handled other things like the multiverse, gravity, dark matter, memory, dreams, and playing with the brain, which they do a lot of in Rick and Morty, and just looked at the occurrences in the different episodes and kind of how that works out with our real world science.
That's something I hadn't actually considered before, but makes total sense once I've thought of it, that you putting your consciousness into a freshly grown, full-grown brain, it yep. might misfire a lot, because that fresh brain doesn't have the same neural pathways right. built that you built up over your lifetime. Those things get generated by experience. And I could see where you blow a parietal
exactly.
lobe.
Right, right. Well, it's like, to be almost flippant about it, you're putting your consciousness into this nice, smooth brain over there with no wrinkles and crevices, kind of in a figurative sense. And, how's it going to – it's not going to have any muscle memory. You're not going to have any of that stuff unless just by virtue of putting the consciousness into that organ, that new, fresh brain, it causes the structural changes, which is – now you're treading between philosophy and science in that sense. But also, the trope of I have a vat – I have a clone army in my basement all living in these vats. We don't know how to grow something fast. And when we've tried, really bad things have happened.
Yeah.
And so I can't grow a 40-year-old version of me and have it ready to go just in case tomorrow I get in a car accident and I need to send my brain out and go put it into a clone body. I can't. There's no way of doing that. There's no way. If I want a 40-year-old clone body, how long it's going to take to grow that? 40 years. And we don't have any idea of how to grow something outside of the womb, even. Although we're getting close on that, and this is one of those cases where the science gets pretty weird. There are these things called biobags, and they've used them with fetal sheep, that they've taken the fetal sheep out of the mother, put it into this biobag, hooked up all the circulatory and all the umbilical analogs, and it has continued to thrive inside this extra body artificial womb. And those are kind of neat slash creepy because they have pictures, and you can see in videos that the twitching fetal lambs that are inside these basically big Ziploc bags with tubes coming in and out. And the idea is that these might help out with preemie babies in the not too far off future.
And I suddenly had a thought of a fresh new clone of Michael Phelps jumping into a pool and drowning because he doesn't have the muscle memory to swim.
Exactly. Right. Or maybe this one likes chess instead because, you know, he's going to make some choices that might be different.
Interesting.
Even if, you know, if you go to, the boys from Brazil, the idea that there were all these clones of Hitler.
Right.
You know, they're not all going to be world leaders and fascist dictators. As, you know, they're not going to all do that. That was nurture. And so you could have a little Hitler, but there's no real clear way of saying, well, yeah, you should kill all the little Hitler clones because they're all going to grow up to be adult Hitlers at his worst. No, they're not. They're going to be what they're going to be when they grow up. So, yeah. And like I said, all that stuff, because Rick and Morty stays fairly close to science fiction kind of tropes and the usual way of using science. It goes out in its own many different ways, too. But it was just a lot of fun to look at the science behind these things that, you know, as a science fiction fan, we all kind of take for granted of just like, oh, clones. Yeah, okay, clones. So anyway, I know about clones, blah, 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 clones. And then kind of get into the science and go, whoa, that's more interesting than the fiction. There's we can't clone primates yet, but there's agricultural animals. We have good success with that. And there's a polo team in Argentina. They're all the same horse. They're all clones of the same horse.
I read about that.
Yeah. That's where it kind of just takes a minute and you go, wait a minute. They're all the same horse. And they were, you know, funded by the owner of the polo team, which was a pretty smart, you got a really good horse. Boy, I wish I had a whole team of those horses. Hold my beer. Here you go. But we're still many, 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 many years away, if not 100 plus, of, wow, he's a really good football player. I wish I had a whole team of him holding the beer. So,
but it's a whole new spin on the clones from the Clone Wars, huh?
Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, just to keep walking down this kind of weird path, you kind of think, okay, well, and this is where Rick and Morty kind of I do have admiration for the show because they've integrated the different pieces of science to a large extent that if you're able to do this, then you should be able to do all the steps leading up to that. And that's where, you know, if you talk Star Wars, it kind of, it falls apart just a little bit when you start talking about the clones and things like that, that if I could make unlimited clones, then there's a whole lot of things that would not be problematic at all. If I had the technology to make just unlimited clones, why does anybody have any machine parts in them at all? Why don't I just grow an arm? Why grow an arm? Why not grow a whole new body and just put me right into it? And so, yeah, you start to think. My thinking is, again, biases for science, that if you do kind of lean a little bit heavier on science than we do in some of these things, I think you get a better story. I think you get a more interesting story. And I think the audience is ready for that. I think Rick and Morty shows that if you lean on science and if you mention this tougher, harder science, even if it's a joke or even if it's just a casual kind of funny usage of it, the audience responds and the audience hangs on and digs it. And they want more of that kind of stuff, that kind of edgy, fringy science. They want to understand. They want to learn. They want to know more.
Cool. Now, in the show, I mean, all of these concepts were picked from the show. Which ones were your favorite and your favorite rabbit hole to dive down into?
favorite rabbit hole. Well, favorite. Let me go with favorite first, because rabbit hole, you, as you can tell, it's just our quick question on clones, which ended up being about 10 minutes. The favorite one, just kind of almost offhand, is from Pickle Rick, when he lured the cockroach over and cracked open its carapace and then licked its brain, or what passes for a cockroach brain, and it started to move. Cockroach nervous systems are rather simple. And while I don't recommend licking a cockroach brain, you can control a cockroach brain. And there are groups, research groups out there that do that kind of thing, to the point that they can remotely control cockroaches and drive them, kind of quotes around the word drive, but they can move them around, as per, you know, where they want them to go, to follow a specific path or something like that. They're not really programming the cockroaches, but they can make them go left if they want them to go left, and make them go right if they want them to go right. In fact, there's a company in Michigan called Backyard Brains. They've done a TED Talk or two, and they will sell you a little kit for about, I don't know, $99 or $100 or something like that. And you can do your own little brain surgery on cockroaches, and it's connected to a little app on your phone, and you can drive a cockroach that will wear this little backpack that you attach to it and then into its antenna. And it's, so it's not that far from the truth, quote unquote truth, of the real science in that episode. So that was kind of neat that it was, you know, that was something that I could find a really quick, direct analog to in our world from Rick and Morty. The rabbit hole that I just finally had to throw my hands up and say, stop, I will be doing this forever, easily was the multiverse. The idea of that we are not just in one universe, that there are universe after universe after universe after universe out there, which, as we kind of move forward in physics, is probably more true than not. I tell my students that probably I would put money on it, not a lot, but I'd put a bit of money on it, on the idea that within their lifetime, that if they would study physics, certainly if not their lifetime, their kids' lifetime, that where we kind of learn certain things in physics, one of the things that the next generation will probably learn is we live in a multiverse, period. No more, you know, no, we might, it's looking like, but just we live in a multiverse. There's evidence out there of the pieces that kind of lead up to it, that if you accept this and you accept this, which are that the universe started with the Big Bang, and that the inflation model is the way the universe spread out to where it is now, then kind of the next step of, if you believe A and B, then you have to believe C, which is there are multiverses. There are many different universes. And on top of that, and this is where we're taking the left turn into the rabbit hole, there are different flavors of multiverses. There are physically based multiverses. There are multiverses that are kind of what we would think of as different dimensions. There are multiverses within multiverses within multiverses, which is kind of where you just need to go outside and lay down in the grass and look up at the sun for a little while, or look up at the clouds for a little while. Don't look at the sun, because it is just, it goes on and on and on. And you can think, if there's an infinite number of universes out there, and that's something I play with in the book, we like to say infinite a lot here on Earth as humans. We have no idea what that concept means. We have no concept. Because if there's an infinite number of universes, then there's how many universes are there with a version of me like this talking to you right now? Well, there would be an infinite number, because there's an infinite number of universes. Okay. Well, how many versions are there where we're living in some kind of steampunk world where you rang up the operator who rang up me, and I had to come out of my lab where I have green glowing plasma in little glass spheres, and I have these weird goggles with gears on them? Well, there's an infinite number of universes like that. Anything you can imagine, there's an infinite number of those universes, which is what, you know, Rick and Morty plays with the Council of Ricks, and there's an infinite number of Ricks, and there's an infinite number of Mortys, and an infinite number of Summers. And he threatens them with that of just, I can always go out and get more grandkids if you guys piss me off. With the dark implication that he might have done that many times. Yeah, so multiverses, you can just go on and on and on and on, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I'm sort of like blowing a gasket here because I had always imagined what a multiverse was, like, yeah, but I'd never considered the fact as, do I exist in all of those other verses
yes,
at
I
the
know.
Same time? Or is my soul rolling through each one consecutively, where I'm jumping from, like, I live in one, then I die, then I live in the next one, then I die, then I live in the next one? How does that work? Which way is it? Is it some combination of them both? Do I accidentally exist in one multiverse more than one time?
If you woke up in a different one, would you even know? Or
yeah.
would they, if you started complaining and screaming about this isn't right, would they just lock you up? And who's in our, who have we locked up saying this world isn't right? And where did they actually come? Oh yeah, you can see what I mean? Wormhole.
Yeah.
Wormhole, you can spend,
yep.
wormhole.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
rabbit hole.
Yep.
You can spend a long time. And then when you start to think just the versions of the multiverse we accept in science fiction and pop culture, for instance, what on the CW and the DC shows, Flash
mm-hmm.
and Green Arrow and that stuff, they're coming up on Crisis on Infinite Earths. Just that's one flavor of multiverse where everything's pretty close to being similar, but just a little bit a shade off here or there. That's the easiest. It's not the easiest in terms of making work, but it's kind of the simplest understanding and explanation of a multiverse. There's so many more
mm-hmm.
that you could have. And there's functional and literal and practical universes that could be out there. And it's just, rabbit hole for days on that.
And I think that's one reason I gave up trying to keep track of which Earth was which in both the DC and the Marvel Comics universes. I'm like, you say Earth 33. I don't know what that means. Go away. Just go away.
Well, I'm old school DC fan enough that I remember the DC universe before the original Crisis on Infinite
mm-hmm.
Earth.
Me too. Me
and
too.
Then, you know, I was working on Newsarama and was covering all the stuff with Final Crisis when it all got refined down to 52, which I thought was ridiculous that they picked an arbitrary number like 52. And also the pushback that Grant Morrison gave. And no, there's actually many, many more than that. And you still see those echoes. It's like DC really hasn't made up their mind. And then, of course, Marvel's just like, whatever. Just throw a number on it. There you go. Doesn't matter.
It's like Earth Prime, Earth 16, all these
yeah,
other ones. Yeah.
616. But then they supposedly collapsed everything down. But then now they're going back out and finding more because they collapsed it. Now Franklin Richards is out there making more again or has made more. It's just, yeah. Yep. But that's a very easy way of understanding it, but based kind of in this touch on science.
Yeah, and I have to wonder if the cockroach brain remote control experiments, did somebody get that idea from the movie The Fifth Element? Because Fifth Element was the first place I ever saw cockroaches guided by remote control, and that was, what, 25 years ago?
yeah. I'm betting it came along before that, but maybe it did. I mentioned that in the introduction of the book. I really, really, and this is where I kind of, I happily straddle the line between kind of metaphysics and science on this one. I like to believe that we imagine our own future, that we tell ourselves stories of what we could have and what we could be and what we could invent in the future. And there are people who take those stories and then turn them into reality. That's kind of their job in the universe in the world is to turn those visions that we had, those stories that we've told ourselves into reality. Again, this is as metaphysical as I get on my good days. but you know, I grew up in the generation that, you know, after school every day, you turned on the TV to watch the repeats of the original Star Trek. And then, you know, the next generation, when I was getting out of high school, you go to NASA, you go to JPL, you go to many different labs and find people my age, a little bit older even, that were doing the same thing as kids. And on some level, that's really cool, and held that example from Star Trek out there as something that they were reaching for. And you know, now, as I say when I talk to groups, just we all have communicators in our pockets that kind of double as tricorders and also as the pad from Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm not saying that without Star Trek we wouldn't have cell phones, but I like to think that we tell ourselves stories of what we'll do in the future, what we'll have, what we'll make. And we need that imagination to kind of build our future. And for a long time, I got kind of old and cynical and just thought we didn't have, where's today's Star Trek? This is horrible. We won't have a future because we don't have Star Trek and no dreaming. But then here are the Marvel movies. How many different science projects from the kid at the science fair in middle school to Obama saying, we're building Iron Man. Literally, he said, we're building Iron Man, in talking about an exoskeleton suit that was and is still in development by DARPA and other organizations. Those movies, I think, are responsible for a lot of helping us kind of to see the future that we want to make. And I mentioned that, like I said, in the introduction, that kind of my biggest dream for this book, for anything that I do when I use pop culture to teach science, is that, well, as I say, I have this dream that, you know, in 20, 30 years, someone's receiving the Nobel Prize in physics, and it's because they figured out that they proved that we live in a multiverse, that we're not in just a singular universe, that we live in a multiverse. And so to zoom in on the scene that they're accepting the award and giving the speech before the crowd, and a reporter says, how did you ever get this idea that we might live in this? Where did this even start? And the Nobel Prize winner says, well, did you ever see this show called Rick and Morty? And just the ideas, the seeds, you know, I'm a science teacher. I can't take any of that stuff for granted. I get the questions. I have to field the questions from my students all day long of something that we talk about in class may spark something that they saw in a movie and TV or read about that they want to, you know more about. That this stuff, these stories that we tell ourselves, it affects us, and it helps some people to see a future, to see a better future. And, you know, I certainly lean on the science side of things, but there's, you know, you can make the arguments for other things as well of, this is the world that this story told about. I want that world. For a long time, I wanted to live in kind of a universe that is headed towards what you see in Star Trek in terms of both the science, the technology, and kind of what it says, the good news it says about humanity, that we can put some crappy stuff behind us.
Nice. Oh, hopefulness. I remember that. Now, were there any experiments or concepts that you had selected from the show to cover that didn't make it into the book?
Not really. I think while we were putting the book together, I keep saying we, and I'm not being one of those annoying people of speaking of myself in the royal we. It was kind of a group effort between my editor and myself on figuring out, okay, well, where can we fit this? Where can we fit this? And we kind of really were aiming to be as exhaustive as we could be. And then I kind of had the idea after everything was done, oh, we forgot artificial intelligence, because it has a kind of quick mention or two in there. It's not one of the larger concepts, but that is one thing. If you're reading this book going, I want to know about the Butterbot, or I want to know about the defense system in Rick's ship that kills all those people in the spider planet that has the best ice cream. That the artificial intelligence isn't in there, which is probably, you know, you want to talk about rabbit holes. I could have gone on and on and on and on about artificial intelligence and just kind of where we are and what we're doing. But at the same time, that's the risk of writing a book about current science. I was writing this book last year at this time. I could have written a book, you know, I could have written about artificial intelligence, but it would have been last year at this time. We've already moved past that. And so that's, I don't know, maybe it's for the best that I didn't bring it in there. It's like I mentioned black holes. And in between the British edition coming out in May and the American version coming out in October, the UK version says, and someday we'll probably be able to take a picture of a black hole to confirm what one looks like.
And they did.
And they did. So the American version says in, what was it, April of 2019, a picture of a black hole was taken. And, you know, so it kind of has to, the American version is just a slight bit, a little bit more up to date. Yeah, it's a constantly evolving, constantly forward moving thing.
So since you didn't have enough extra material to make a second Rick and Morty book, what other shows out there handle science in a way that you would like to explore in a future book for your students?
I love Stranger Things. I love the science in Stranger Things. It is based in some, you know, legitimate theoretical physics, and it does stay remarkably consistent with itself, which is nice to see, which is something that you can do when you have kind of, we're in this age of singular storytellers with the Duffer brothers who are kind of guiding that and making sure everything stays in the same, within the boundaries that they've set up in terms of the science. It's tough though, because these types of books, if you go to your bookstore or search Amazon for The Science Of, you will be overwhelmed. There are a ton of The Science Of ... books. And so I've been talking to my editor at Simon & Schuster about, you know, I want to do another one, but I want to do it so it's different, so it's cool, so it's something neat to look at and read, that you kind of, you want to pick it back up after you've put it down and look at it again. And so I have a couple ideas out there. I mentioned Stranger Things because I don't think that's going to happen. You want to stay a little bit, oh, well, I don't even know if I want to stay away from the larger ones. I'd love to write a Stranger Things book, but I don't know if that's a possibility. But there are a couple other ones I'm looking at, and I'm hoping to chase at least one of them.
Well, good luck with finding your next deep dive pop culture science topic to dive into. I should let our listeners know that Atria has graciously provided us. We're going to give away a couple copies of The Science of Rick and Morty. And I think you should come up with a question for them to answer in order to enter the contest.
Ooh.
A Rick and Morty question.
A Rick and Morty question. Let's see. How about the question is, I don't want to get too hard. What is written on the box that's on the shelf in Rick's in garage? What's written on the box that's on the shelf in the garage?
Cool. Excellent. That will keep away the posers and the fake contest enterers.
Right.
We'll have that up there for them. But Matt, thank you so much for sharing your enthusiastic just love of science and fascination with Rick and Morty with us today.
You're welcome. It's been fun.
Now, where can folks find you online other than thescienceof.org and where else?
Let's see. Thescienceof.org. I should be better with my socials, shouldn't I? I'm going to take the cheap and easy way out. Thescienceof.org has all the stuff on the links to everything on the upper right-hand side. We have a Facebook feed that I put up new cool science articles every day. That's kind of aimed at both science teachers and people who are science curious, just neat stuff that could be used, kind of blurring the line between fiction and fact. And then we're on Twitter as well. None of our socials, because we're full-time teachers, none of them are as active as they should be, but we're working on all of that.
Cool. Well, again, thank you for sharing your time today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care. I told that devil
to take you back. Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
I really enjoy interviews like this where you combine the media, the TV shows, the movies, the books that we love with real-world science, real-world applications. Because what we love is science fiction. There is science in the fiction, and playing with exactly where those boundaries sort of blur into each other is fun. And yes, we are giving away two copies of The Science of Rick and Morty. We'll run this contest through December 14th. And the way to enter is very similar to the Secret Sauce contest. What you do is go to sliceofsci-fi.com, click on the Contact Us link, fill out the form, select Have a Different Question, and in the message box, type in Rick and Morty. Now, if you type it in correctly, a field should magically appear below that message box asking you to enter the answer to the question that Matt provided us, which is what is written on the box on the shelf in Rick's garage. And you'll submit that answer. And when the contest entry period is over, I'll select two winners, just pull random emails out of the hat, and contact you for your mailing address. Actually, if you want to, in the message box after you type in Rick and Morty, you can put your address if you want to save a little bit of time. And to answer the question, I'm doing it this way so that other people don't see the answers in public and just start submitting them. You have to do your own footwork, your own legwork. You've either watched the show and you've seen the box, or you've watched the show, seen the box, and not noticed what was written on it. So you're going to go back and watch a couple episodes to see if you can figure out what that says. Or you can cheat and use Google. I won't hold it against you because I didn't know. I would have had to have used Google if Matt hadn't told me. So there's that. We also have two other contests that are on the website right now. You can enter to win one of six copies of the Scary Stories documentary. Yes, I have more than I asked for because both me and the distributor thought the first shipment of contest copies got lost. And it turns out they both showed up at the same time, which was kind of awkward. But the publisher said, eh, whatever, have fun. So we're doing that. And Quarto, the publisher that put out that beautiful Star Trek Stellar Cartography book last year, has a book on teaching people how to draw dragons and warriors and trolls and elves and all sorts of fantasy characters, but mostly dragons. So you can enter to win one of two copies of those. So good luck, everyone. All three contests will end December 14th. That will give me enough time to collect everyone's mailing addresses and hopefully get them out to everybody before Christmas. We do have a couple of more fun interviews coming up. One about James Bond, one about Game of Thrones. The Death Scribe interview sessions I typically do with the five finalists, the five writers and directors who are performing in the Death Scribe competition, has been pushed back because Death Scribe has been pushed back to sometime in January. So we will get to those finalists probably later in December, but we will get to them. Because as you know, Death Scribe is close to my heart. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And one of these years, I will go to Chicago and check it out. But if you have any questions or comments regarding the contest, regarding... I'm not your go-to girl for Rick and Morty, but I know a guy. But any of your questions, call 602-635-6976 and ask away. I will do my best to answer. Or you can just shoot me an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play Podcasts, on Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Player FM. You can leave a review for the show on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. Let people know that you are enjoying listening to these shows, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. And yes, I do engage in conversation on Twitter. I will answer your questions on Twitter. Trivia questions. If you need help finding something old sci-fi, I might be able to help. So, use the Twitters. That's what it's there for. You can also check us out over on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. If you're on Facebook, leave a message to some of the articles and other items that Neil is promoting over there for us. Say hi to Neil. He's doing a bang-up job for us because I am not a fan of Facebook, but he wrangles those whitewater rapids quite well, and he's the man for doing it. And of course, there is the website, sliceofsci-fi.com. Come on over, check out other interviews that we've done. Check out the reviews of the movies and TV shows and DVDs that we have done. And weigh in with your own review rating. Yes, I know that for some reason, Google changed how it interprets Rich Snippet's schema. And the plugin that I'm using that allows you to leave ratings on stuff that our folks here have reviewed is kind of busted. You can still leave the review. The stars just won't show up on Google search. So I am yet again annoyed at Google. But that appears to be a constant state of being for anybody who does website work, who tries to keep their website following all of Google's hoops and fiery jumps and just following all of Google's rules to be ranked in Google so people can find your work and enjoy it. So I have to find another plugin. Unless the people who have this plugin fix theirs, and it doesn't look like they're going to do it anytime soon. Yeah, that's TMI, wasn't it? That's technical TMI. Anyway, I want to send a shout out to everyone who is supporting the show through Patreon and through PayPal. Thank you so much for helping keep things online and flowing digitally. Thank you so much. If you want to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. And yeah, we do have a monthly perk winner over there too. If a monthly pledge is more than your budget can handle these days, especially with the holidays coming up, you can just use the PayPal link, throw a donation this way every now and then. That link is paypal.me /sci-fi summer. And all of your donations go to help keeping, like I said, Slice of Sci-Fi online, Babylon Podcast online, Writers After Dark, Charlie Jade, a couple of other projects I'm trying to get going, including a Slice of Sci-Fi shop where you can buy stuff through affiliate links to also help support the show, but also obtain some of the swag that I've collected over the years. All of these things were sent to me by publishers for reviews. So we've got books, we've got advanced copies of books, we've got DVDs, we've got Blu-rays, and they're free. All I ask is that you pitch in for postage. And like I said, I'm still building it, still putting the shop together, but if you have any questions about the shop and want to know more about what's going to be there or how you could help, let me know. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi. Not next week, but the week after. Take a little holiday break. And we'll see you then. Take care.